Chapter 3. The Big Brown River drops nonchalantly south from Tennessee and runs as straight as a hand-dug channel for 30 miles through the center of Tyler County, Mississippi. 2 miles above the Ford County line, it begins twisting and looping, and by the time it leaves Tyler County, it looks like a scared snake, curling desperately and going nowhere. Its water is thick and heavy, muddy and slow, shallow in most places. The Big Brown is not known for its beauty. Sand, silt, and gravel bars line its innumerable bends and curves. 100 sloughs and creeks feed it with an inexhaustible supply of slow-moving water. Its journey through Ford County is brief. It dips and forms a wide circle around 2,000 acres in the northeasternmost corner of the county, then leaves and heads back toward Tennessee. The circle is almost perfect, and an island is almost formed. But at the last moment, the Big Brown turns away from itself and leaves a narrow strip of land between its banks. The circle is known as Paget Island, a deep, dense woodland covered in pine, gum, elm, oak, and a myriad of swamps and bayous and sloughs, some connected but most isolated. Little of the rich soil had ever been cleared. Nothing was harvested on the island except timber and lots of corn for illegal whiskey and marijuana, but that was a later story. On the thin strip of land between the banks of the Big Brown, a paved road entered and left, came and went, always with someone watching. The road was built long ago by the county, but very few taxpayers ever dared to use it. The entire island had been in the Paget family since Reconstruction, when Rudolph Paget, a carpetbagger from the north, arrived a bit late after the war and found all the prime land taken. He searched in vain, found nothing attractive, then somehow stumbled upon the snake-infested island. On the map, it looked promising. He put together a band of newly freed slaves and, with guns and machetes, fought his way onto the island. No one else wanted it. Rudolph married a local whore and began cutting timber. Since timber was in great demand after the war, he became prosperous. The local proved to be quite fertile, and soon there was a horde of little Pagets on the island. One of his ex-slaves had learned the art of distillery. Rudolph became a corn farmer who neither ate nor sold his crop, but instead used it to produce what was soon known as one of the finest whiskeys in the Deep South. For 30 years, Rudolph made moonshine, until he died of cirrhosis in 1902. By then, an entire clan of Pagets inhabited the island and were quite proficient at milling timber and producing illegal whiskey. Scattered about the island were half a dozen distilleries, all well protected and concealed, all operating with state-of-the-art machinery. The Pagets were famous for their whiskey, though fame was not something they sought. They were secretive and clannish, fiercely private, and deathly afraid that someone might infiltrate their little kingdom and disrupt their considerable profits. They said they were loggers, and it was well known that they produced timber and were prosperous at it. The Paget Lumber Company was very visible on the main highway near the river. They claimed to be legitimate people, taxpayers and such, with their children in the public schools. During the 1920s and 1930s, when alcohol was illegal and the nation was thirsty, Paget whiskey could not be distilled fast enough. It was shipped in oak barrels across the Big Brown and hauled by trucks up north, as far away as Chicago. The patriarch, president, and director of production and marketing was a tight-fisted old warrior named Clovis Paget, eldest son of Rudolph and the local. Clovis had been taught at an early age that the best profits were those from which no taxes were extracted. That was lesson number one. Number two preached the marvelous message of dealing strictly in cash. Clovis was a hard-nosed cash and no taxes man, and the Pagets were rumored to have more money than the Mississippi State Treasury. In 1938, three revenue agents sneaked across the Big Brown in a rented flatboat in search of the source of old Paget. Their covert invasion of the island was flawed in many ways, the obvious being the original idea itself. but for some reason they chose midnight as their hour to cross the river. They were dismembered and buried in deep graves. In 1943, a strange event occurred in Ford County. An honest man was elected sheriff, or high sheriff, as he is commonly known. His name was Kuntz Lantrip, and he wasn't really that honest, but certainly sounded good on the stump. He vowed to end corruption, to clean up county government, to put the bootleggers and moonshiners, even the Pagets, out of business. It made for a nice speech, and Lantrip won by 8 votes. His supporters waited and waited, and finally, 6 months after taking office, he organized his deputies and crossed the Big Brown on the only bridge, an ancient wooden structure that had been built by the county in 1915 at the insistence of Clovis. The Pagets sometimes used it in the springtime when the river was high. No one else was allowed to cross it. 2 of the deputies were shot in the head, and Lantrip's body was never found. It was carefully laid to rest on the banks of a swamp by 3 Paget Negroes. Buford, the eldest son of Clovis, supervised the burial. The massacre was hot news in Mississippi for weeks, and the governor threatened to send in the National Guard. But the Second War was raging, and D-Day soon captured the attention of the country. There wasn't much left of the National Guard anyway, and those who were able to fight had little interest in attacking Paget Island. The beaches of Normandy would be more inviting. With the noble experiment of an honest sheriff behind them, the good people of Ford County elected one from the old school. His name was Mackie Don Coley, and his father had been the high sheriff back in the 20s when Clovis was in charge of Paget Island. Clovis and the senior Coley had been rather close, and it was widely known that the sheriff was a rich man because old Paget was allowed to move so freely out of the county. When Mackie Don announced his candidacy, Buford sent him $50,000 in cash. Mackie Don won in a landslide. His opponent claimed to be honest. There was a widely held but unprofessed belief in Mississippi that a good sheriff must be a little crooked to ensure law and order. Whiskey, whoring, and gambling were simply facts of life, and a good sheriff must be knowledgeable in these affairs to properly regulate them and protect the Christians. Those vices could not be eliminated, so the high sheriff must be able to coordinate them and synchronize the orderly flow of sin. For his coordinating efforts, he was to be paid a little extra from the purveyors of such wickedness. He expected it. Most of the voters expected it. No honest man could live on such a humble salary. No honest man could move quietly through the shadows of the underworld. For the better part of 100 years following the Civil War, the Pagets owned the sheriffs of Ford County. They bought them outright with sacks of cash. Mackie Don Coley received $100,000 a year, it was rumored, and during election years, he got whatever he needed. And they were generous with other politicians. They quietly bought and kept influence. They asked little. They just wanted to be left alone on their island. After the Second War, the demand for moonshine began a steady decline. Since generations of Pagets had been schooled to operate outside the law, Buford and the family began to diversify into other forms of illicit commerce. Selling only timber was dull and subject to too many market factors, and most important, did not generate the piles of cash the family expected. They ran guns, stole cars, counterfeited, bought and burned buildings to collect insurance. For 20 years, they operated a highly successful brothel on the county line until it mysteriously burned in 1966. They were creative and energetic people, always scheming and searching for opportunity, always waiting for someone to rob. There were rumors, quite significant at times, that the Pagets were members of the Dixie Mafia, a loose-knit gang of redneck thieves who ran rampant through the Deep South in the 60s. These rumors were never verified and were, in fact, discounted by many because the Pagets were simply too secretive to share their business with anyone. Nonetheless, the rumors persisted for years, and the Pagets were the source of endless gossip in the cafes and coffee shops around the square in Clanton. They were never considered local heroes, but certainly legends. In 1967, a younger Paget fled to Canada to avoid the draft. He drifted to California, where he tried marijuana and realized he had a taste for it. After a few months as a peacenik, he got homesick and sneaked back to Paget Island. He brought with him 4 pounds of pot, which he shared with all his cousins, and they too were quite taken with it. He explained that the rest of the country, and primarily California, was toking like crazy. As usual, Mississippi was at least 5 years behind the trend. The stuff could be grown cheaply, then hauled to the cities where there was demand. His father, Gil Paget, grandson of Clovis, saw the opportunity, and soon many of the old cornfields were converted to cannabis. A 2,000-foot strip of land was cleared for a runway, and the Pagets bought themselves an airplane. Within a year, there were daily flights to the outskirts of Memphis and Atlanta, where the Pagets had established their network. To their delight and with their help, marijuana finally became popular in the Deep South. The moonshining slowed considerably. The brothel was gone. The Pagets had contacts in Miami and Mexico, and the cash was coming in by the truckloads. For years, no one in Ford County had a hint that the Pagets were trafficking in drugs, and they never got caught. No Paget was ever indicted for a drug-related offense. In fact, not a single Paget had ever been arrested. 100 years of moonshining, stealing, gun-running, gambling, counterfeiting, whoring, bribing, even killing, and eventually drug manufacturing, and not a single arrest. They were smart people, careful, deliberate, patient with their schemes. Then Danny Paget, Gil's youngest son, was arrested for the rape and murder of Rhoda Castlelaw.